Hey everyone, I'm Scott Cunningham, aka Scottsy Business, and we're back with another episode of Tech and Things, which is now my second episode of Tech and Things and my 548th episode overall. This will be titled The Failure of Centralized Crypto Exchanges. We're going to be talking about centralized exchanges and why I dislike them and why I think you should avoid them, the many failures of centralized crypto exchanges, the importance of KYC and furthermore avoiding it, why decentralized exchanges are what I would recommend you should be using, as well as swap exchanges or anything along those lines, or anything that is utilizing a decentralized aspect in some way and doesn't require KYC. There's many other alternatives. We'll talk about a few as well. And the next episode that will be coming up after this will be decentralizing your life. So that will sort of follow up after this one, focusing on the need for maximum privacy, anonymity, and financial freedom. So let's dive into it after a quick word from my sponsor. A big thank you and shout out to our sponsor, Apex One, that offers the benefits of a cryptocurrency exchange combined with AI to maximize your profits. Plus, they don't require KYC, so check out apexone.ai today. All right, so as we're diving into it, just keep a few things in mind. There are certain exchanges that don't have KYC, but they might be banned or restricted in certain countries, such as mainland China, Cuba, Iran, North Korea, Sudan, Singapore, Syria, and surprisingly, the United States of America. This list might have expanded a little bit, but those are generally what I've seen across many different exchanges. Diving in real quick, we're just going to go through a list of some of the centralized exchanges that I've tested that require KYC, and then we'll get into the mix of things of why I think you should avoid these exchanges and KYC and a lot of the problems surrounding these. So I haven't gone through every exchange, obviously, but the top 10 exchanges in the world that are centralized exchanges are Binance, Coinbase, Kraken, KuCoin, Bybit, OKX, Bitfinex, Bitstamp, Gate.io, and Gemini. The only one that I know on this list that is not KYC required is Bybit. And that's unfortunate, but it's good to see that at least one is up there at the top. Going through the list of things that I've actually tested and used as well, CoinSquare, which is sort of the Canadian version of Coinbase, CoinSmart, BitMax, Hotbit, Uphold, Poloniex, Kraken, Cash App, Bitflyer, Bitfinex, Bittrex, XT.com, Coinfield, Voyager, and Bitmart. Lots and lots of problems around a lot of these exchanges. We'll briefly talk about some of the issues that some of these exchanges have had. Like, for example, Voyager, huge problems there, bankruptcy, you know, all the works. A lot of these exchanges tend to have either a breach or something malicious happens, something goes on, and then they go into bankruptcy. And usually it seems that the higher ups and the founders, etc., don't end up, you know, in too bad of a place. I mean, sometimes when you have a massive conspiracy going on, like all the fraud and things going on with FTX or with Celsius, they will face, you know, criminal charges, but a lot of times that doesn't seem to be the case. But we'll dive a little bit deeper into each of these examples. Before I go through some of the issues that various exchanges have faced, I wanted to highlight the worst example because it's the number one exchange in the world, Binance. Binance colluded with Huobi and Probit a while back to do a hostile takeover of Steam along with Justin Sun from Tron. I've already, you know, covered this through and through. Most people are aware of this who have a vested interest in Steam or the newer platform Hive. But essentially, Binance, Probit, and Huobi gave Justin Sun control over all of the users' funds within their platforms, allowed him to then stake those funds and use them for governance to do a hostile takeover of the chain. You would think this would be illegal. I mean, at the very minimum, it's completely malicious and unethical that an exchange holding your funds can then take your funds and use them for governance to enact policy on those chains and platforms So that's the most egregious example. And again, they're pretty much unscathed and they're the number one platform regardless. The whole point of this podcast is mostly to get across that centralized exchanges are not the good guys, and most of them have had problems with them. There's no exchange where you can say, well, it's so big it can't fail, or they won't do something wrong, because all the biggest exchanges already have done things wrong or had breaches or bankruptcies, whatever it happens to be. There is no exchange that is safe. Because I remember a couple of years back, I kept telling people, do not store your crypto in a centralized exchange. Never do this. And I was always met with, yeah, but it's too big to fail. Like, what are the odds that something's going to happen? Well, since then, everything has happened, and all of these exchanges have had some sort of issue. And that's what we're going to talk about now. So, I mean, the very first one, most people are fairly aware of Mt. Gox. This is the first major failure of an exchange in 2014. They had a breach and they lost 850,000 Bitcoin. That is the first example. Then we've got Kraken, which is number three on the top list. They were fined by the SEC, so there's some issues there, obviously. Number seven, Bitfinex. They suffered a massive hack and they lost 119,000 Bitcoin. Cryptopia, they had a breach and then declared bankruptcy. This one actually affected me personally, as I had close to 100,000 Dogecoins on Cryptopia. And if I was able to have access to that, pull that out and sell it at the top, I could have made close to $100,000. But instead, I ended up with nothing, and I'm still going through the claims process to get back my initial investment, which was around $250 Canadian. BitConnect was, a complete Ponzi scheme. Quadriga CX here in Canada, the founder allegedly had 100% of the access to the crypto, and it was all in his wallet, and he died with the wallet never being recovered, and they declared bankruptcy. Again, we all know what happened with FTX, but for a quick refresher, this was the number two exchange in the world, and Binance sort of helped this go along by offering to bail them out and then pulling back and selling all their tokens as well. But this is mostly not on Binance, it's mostly on Sam Bankman-Fried and his other company, Alameda Research, which they use to mislead investors by investing in the coins that they were going to accept onto the exchange via Alameda, and then using those profits to then pump their own cryptocurrency FTX and completely misleading investors and eventually leading to a complete and total failure. ShakePay is an interesting one because they aren't technically doing anything wrong. But a lot of people are misled by ShakePay, thinking that they're getting free crypto when they explain in their FAQ the only reason they can afford to do this is because they sell their crypto above market price and they buy it below market price. So you're not actually getting a fair shake on ShakePay, but that's subsidized by giving you some free Bitcoin. So most people overlook it. I would agree that free Bitcoin is good, but you should not ever be buying and selling on ShakePay because you're not getting the real prices, and you could lose a lot of money in this process depending on how much you're investing. Beyond that, we have a lot of lending platforms that also had exchanges attached to them having issues, going bankrupt. Celsius is the biggest example we have. Where the founder's actually facing criminal charges. And then we have BlockFi as well. I genuinely expect most lenders to face similar situations, so we'll see how that all plays out. Looking at most lenders today, a lot of them are down 90 plus percent with their coins, so we'll see how that plays out. Now, more importantly than what platforms and exchanges to avoid, are what platforms and exchanges that you should be using. So, any platform, any exchange that doesn't require KYC is the best way that you could start off. And Bybit, being the number five exchange in the world, based on volume, by the way, is a great example. However, they do have some restricted countries, like I mentioned earlier. But you know, a lot of this can be gotten around just by using a VPN, because if they don't have KYC, you don't really have any issues with where you live aside from using a VPN. And the United States tends to have a lot of restrictions around using certain services and exchanges in the US. If you're in the US, it's much easier to just VPN over to Canada and get around a lot of these issues. And I'll explain another really good example of this when we get to the swap exchanges. But in terms of platforms that I have tested and used and recommend that do not require KYC, and then I'll explain after why that's important, but first we'll get through the list. CoinEx is one of that I've been using for a very long time. Bybit, again, it's a number five exchange, very good. Bitvo, this is a Canadian-only exchange, so keep that in mind. They also have a crypto Visa prepaid card that you can use physically in person, which is great. Bitforex, Ionomy, they have a lot of coins on here that you can't trade in other places, like DTC, for example, which is really ideal, and like Blurt. They are very interoperable with a lot of Hive and Steam-based tokens, so that's really good to see. Mexi Global, Digifinex, and my sponsor, Apex One. I think it's very, very important that you patronize exchanges that are not requiring you to KYC. However, there are sometimes limitations with your ability to get money in to the platform and out in terms of bank transfers. That is the major obstacle around KYC and non-KYC exchanges. Typically, a KYC exchange, you can do bank transfers. Typically, non-KYC exchanges have limitations around that. There are some that do. As I mentioned, Bitvo, that one you can use e-transfers without KYC, so that's really ideal. And there are many other ways to get crypto in and out of the crypto system, but what I would recommend is it's easier to just stay within the crypto system in terms of being able to spend your crypto. You can, you know, buy gift cards, you can do a lot of different things. It's easier to keep it in crypto because the whole point of crypto is that fiat is flawed. Fiat being regular sovereign currency denominated dollars, you know, Canadian dollars, US dollars, etc. So you want to stay in crypto if you can. And there's many other ways that you can earn it or use decentralized methods to get in and out of the system, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. Before I dive into why KYC is such a big deal, I'll also mention that an easy way to litmus test any of these platforms if they have issues around KYC or transactions, and what I have always done, is the very simple test of just depositing a small amount of cryptocurrency and then trying to withdraw that from their systems to ensure that there's no issues around needing to provide more information. If you think it's like a scam website, whatever it happens to be, the easiest test is to deposit a small amount, withdraw it, make sure there's no issues, and then go from there. And you might also find that they have extremely high minimum requirements for deposits or withdrawals, or that the fees are way higher than they should be. This is just a very good way to do a litmus test of any crypto exchange to ensure that it meets what you're looking for when you're looking for a new exchange to use. And then lastly, I'll mention swap exchanges. Swap exchanges are a great way to quickly and easily exchange cryptocurrencies without having to do any sign up whatsoever, and of course, no KYC requirements. Uniswap is an example where you can trade ERC20 tokens in Ethereum. However, they're not fully decentralized because they, you know, comply with any orders from like the SEC, etc., to remove certain tokens. There was a large sweep a long time ago, well, maybe like a year or two ago, on all derivatives of stocks on Ethereum. Basically, every single company wiped their derivatives. The only company that kept them was Terra Luna, or rather the only cryptocurrency. And of course, we saw what happened with Terra Luna as well. So Stock derivatives are a big no-no for the SEC, and I'd be very interested to see new solutions around that. But for the most part, they're going to be very, very aggressive at going after any kind of cryptocurrencies that do this. So I think most are trying to avoid dealing with those problems. ThorSwap is probably one of the best multi-chain smart contract swap exchanges, and it offers not a crazy amount of options, but it's the most flexible and secure one out there. Because, you know, for Uniswap, you can only trade Ethereum tokens. If you go on like PancakeSwap or something for Binance, you can only trade Binance tokens. But with ThorSwap, you're able to trade across chains, which was not really previously possible with a connected wallet and doing smart contracts, unless you were doing a swap exchange that you were just simply sending the crypto to the exchange and hoping that they would send it back to you and, you know, honor that, which is the next example, which is the best one that I could think of in this category, is SideShift. SideShift has been one of the fastest and most convenient non-smart contract swap exchanges I've ever tested. However, they have issues with operating in the United States, and right now they will redirect you to sideshift.fi and require you to connect a wallet and act more similarly to Uniswap or ThorSwap in that sense. But you can still trade across chains, etc. But most people do not want to be connecting their wallets to be able to use a swap exchange. So, as I mentioned earlier, all you really need to get around this is a VPN. Use Canada or just somewhere else outside of the United States, and you shouldn't have any issues with using the real sideshift.ai website. You might find this to be the case with other platforms as well that I've mentioned, and a lot of times it's just a simple fix of using a VPN to get around any of those geo-filtered blocked websites. Now, in terms of why KYC is such a big deal, is because KYC is linking your real life identity to your wallet or your exchange or whatever account that you're utilizing it with. This will ensure that anything you do will be 100% linked to you with no privacy, anonymity, and, you know, potentially if you're trying to be a little riskier in the way that you operate, maybe a tax audit. However, if you're not using KYC, it's very challenging for them to actually legitimately link you to your transactions. Obviously, with a sophisticated, you know, cybersecurity expert, they're going to go through all the wallets and find a way to connect you to an exchange that is KYC that you might have used. But if you don't do that, if you don't have any KYC exchanges that you're using that are connected to your accounts in some way or another, it's going to be very, very hard to actually do that. And you're probably not doing enough to warrant that to actually happen. But with platforms that are KYC, that you've given your full ID or passport or whatever, and fully identified, they are very easily going to send that information over to the government. And I know someone that I mentioned in the last episode who had this issue where with just like a $600-$700 profit on Wealth Simple, which is a stock exchange that he had to KYC on, and he bought directly and sold and did not report it, and then it ended up being audited by the CRA. So you definitely do not want to go down that route. You're going to cause yourself a lot of unnecessary strife, and KYC platforms are just less convenient. You know, you have to go through all of this process to get your account actually active and be able to use it. And it can take, you know, a day, 2 days. If you want to get started right away, this is a huge unnecessary roadblock for you that you really do not have to deal with. This makes more sense for like stock exchanges and traditional investing, but not so much when you're trying to invest in crypto and really experience a decentralized way of operating and investing. I remember perfectly with BlockFi, for example, one of the lenders that has gone bankrupt. Every time I wanted to withdraw from the platform, they were requiring me to KYC again. and it was just an extreme inconvenience. You have to repeatedly send them over this information. And beyond that, even if you're not worried at all about privacy or anonymity, there's been many times where these exchanges or platforms have been breached and lost customer information. And then you're wondering, okay, well, was my ID or my passport leaked? And then you could have a whole bunch of issues with identity theft that could have been avoided entirely just by using exchanges that don't require KYC. Because whenever people, you know, say, well, who cares? You know, I have nothing to hide. I can KYC. It's like, yeah, but you're introducing all these risks that are completely unnecessary and you do not have to take. This is why you should always patronize non-KYC exchanges and swap exchanges, because they're giving you all the benefits with none of the negatives. Now, if you weren't aware what KYC is, it's really just, you know, a process where typically you'll send in your ID, like a picture of the front and back of your ID or passport. Sometimes they require supporting documents such as a letter or bill that has your address on it as well to verify that information is correct. And sometimes they'll also make you do a liveliness check to make sure that you're a human, where you have to like move around, turn your head one way, turn your head in another way. And sometimes these don't work correctly and it'll take a few tries, or sometimes I've had issues where they just don't work at all. And that can be very frustrating for people, or you might be refused based on the country that you're in. I've seen many, many issues like this. And again, all can be easily avoided by not using KYC exchanges. But a lot of the top exchanges, as I mentioned, the majority of the top 10 and probably the top 50 all do require KYC. So most people aren't aware that there are many other options that do not require KYC. Moving on to some of the decentralized alternatives. So there's a million different ways to use crypto, spend crypto, buy crypto, sell crypto. Some alternative ways outside of the traditional crypto exchanges, swap exchanges, etc., that we've been discussing. There's peer-to-peer trading platforms such as BISC, BISQ.network, or HODL.com, HODL.com. These are both decentralized Bitcoin peer-to-peer trading platforms. There's other trading platforms out there. These are just two examples of good peer-to-peer trading platforms. You can also buy and sell crypto at crypto ATMs. Using an ATM locator, you could find an ATM near you. One example of this, coinatmraider.com. That's a great resource where you can find ATMs that sell and where you can sell and buy cryptocurrency directly. And I've done it myself. It's not too hard. And it will be at a very large fee, though. They're smart. They know who wants to use these platforms, or these services, rather. And they're going to charge you a large fee for doing so. But if you want to get in and out anonymously and potentially anywhere in the world, this is a great option to be able to do that and not have to deal with a lot of the repercussions or accounting issues around tracking all of that. Using alternative peer-to-peer money transfer applications like Cash App are also ways to spend and send money. But I generally avoid things like this because I don't like the idea of letting another company hold my crypto and then let me use it at their leisure. I haven't really tested Cash App very much, but a great example of a terrible example is PayPal, because you need their permission to spend it, send it, buy it, sell it, etc. And all of it's going to be reported and tracked, as I mentioned before. So I would be very weary about that. But if it's for very, very small transactions, maybe something like Cash App is another option for you, just so that you know everything that is available. You can also earn your crypto, right? You could sell physical items on crypto marketplaces, or even use traditional marketplaces like Kijiji or Facebook, and then ask to accept or send crypto as your currency of choice. I think these types of parallel economies where we're just using crypto for everything are going to become more common especially as we see CBDCs come to prominence. And it's going to be a requirement for freedom, privacy, and anonymity that people do patronize parallel economies. So we'll see how that plays out. But furthermore, on earning cryptocurrency, you can earn cryptocurrency in so many different ways. I've done a full breakdown on how I earned over $40,000 at the time of earning. Over the past 4.5 years, when I earned my crypto, I marked down the value. And over that time, I earned $40,000. Obviously, the crypto has gone up, it's gone down. I've spent some, I've sold some, etc. But at the time of earning it, I earned over $40,000 worth of crypto from just posting my video content, my blogs, to many, many different blockchain social platforms. You can go back into my content on YouTube and my various blogs to actually see a lot of those breakdowns. I don't really do that anymore, but it's definitely possible. It's much more challenging today than it was back in the day, but it's still absolutely possible. And if you already have a following, you can definitely port that over onto blockchain social platforms and start earning money. Other ways to earn: airdrops, earn drops, accepting donations in crypto, mining crypto, staking crypto, lending crypto, and other DeFi activities. However, I would generally avoid lending, as we've already discussed. A lot of crypto lenders have gone bankrupt and had many issues. So I would generally avoid that. Personally, if I want to earn crypto passively, I will stake my crypto natively, not through like a DeFi platform, not through anything like that. Natively on the platform that it's built for, I will stake it. The last one that I was staking was Atom on my Trust wallet. But since I've gone back to pretty much fully 50-50% with Bitcoin and Ethereum, I have a little bit of Litecoin and Dashcoin just for spending purposes. But for the most part, I'm just holding Ethereum and Bitcoin now. But you can still, you know, mine, lend, stake, DeFi, all these different ways that you can earn passive income on your crypto as well. And you know, I wouldn't turn my head at airdrops or earn drops, because I earned over $15,000 from one earn drop or airdrop from ENS when they initially launched their token, because I held a .eth address. I've also earned a decent amount of money through, I believe it was Uniswap's airdrop and 1inch's airdrop as well. There's been many exchanges over the years, typically swap exchanges, that when they launch their token, anyone who has traded on their token in the past was able to earn some airdrop from them as well. And that actually ended up being valued pretty highly at the time. Like I said, with my one airdrop, I earned over $15,000. So that was very, very nice to see. And you know, it just takes simple actions a lot of times to be able to do this. I did an interview with the CEO of Earnify, and they have a great website that shows you when you put in your ETH address or Binance smart chain address, you can see what swaps, or I mean, rather, what airdrops are available to you that you have not claimed. They also have a premium option to see more, which I recommend trying at least once just to make sure you've claimed everything, because these airdrops do expire. So you definitely want to make sure that you've taken full advantage, because you do not want to be leaving, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of cryptocurrency that you could have otherwise claimed on the table, because a lot of times these will eventually expire. And the very last one is that you can negotiate working for crypto instead of fiat. Services like Bitwage allow you to receive crypto from your employer, and they enable employers to be able to send you crypto as payment. They also offer you the ability to invest your crypto in a 401k. So there's a lot packed into that, but you can go and listen or watch my interview with Jonathan Chester, the CEO of Bitwage, way back in episode 421. Another quick word from my sponsor before we end things off. Thank you again to our sponsor, Apex One AI, a great cryptocurrency exchange that offers farming, DeFi, AI, liquidity pools, and much more. Get started on apexone.ai and start trading all your favorite cryptocurrencies today. All right, well, thank you everyone for watching and listening in. This has been the 548th episode of Tech and Things, previously Crypto and Things. Make sure you comment, like, subscribe, all that good stuff, and comment hashtag number one ham if you did listen all the way through to the very end of the episode. I always appreciate those of you who do. And please let me know if there's anything that you would like to see me cover in future episodes. For my very first video, I will be diving into some great stuff, the cost of centralization. And that will be looking more so at the fees and the waste of time and resources that centralization actually causes, and predominantly will be focused on blacklists for stablecoins and how that affects transactional fees. So thanks again for tuning in, and until next time, I'll see you then.